murder, you know, if the UN approves. That's not what it says in the Revoya.
That's right. That's a very good way of putting it. Exactly.
That's not what it says.
No,
that's not what it says in the Quran.
I didn't see, you know, like Alif Lam Meme and then UN.
Right.
No, it doesn't work like
Yeah,
that.
We don't have Surah like UN, right?
Don't have
right? So, you know.
Yeah.
Of course, you do maslahat. You do
exactly.
you try to work, you know, with the realities that exist in the world at that time. Mm. But you don't deny, you know, a basic aspect of your religion.
Well, I mean,
and you see, this is the thing.
Mm.
Laws, ahkam, are a basic part of Islam.
Exactly.
Anybody who denies them as a concept or individually
is out of the pale of Islam.
You can't deny ahkam.
No.
This is the problem that we have. Our view of religion is so influenced
ignorant.
By the Western.
Yes, that's true. It is influenced
and by this
much,
kind
yeah.
of neutered.
Neutered, yes.
You know,
I like that word.
Christian.
Yeah.
Mm. In the last couple of centuries, the way it became, of where secularism took over, and you know, Christianity was just, you know, on Sunday, and if you just be a good person,
yeah,
and you
yeah.
know, don't get too involved about laws.
Mm.
You know, that's for the Jews. That's the Old Testament. We're New Testament. You know,
yeah.
that kind of stuff.
Right, sure.
Okay.
Yes.
As though, what the Ten Commandments are not. you know?
Yeah, I'm not applicable anymore.
Right. I mean.
Yeah.
I'm just saying as an example.
Yeah,
right?
Of course. I mean, that's what we're saying.
You know that usury is illegal in according to the Bible.
Of course it is,
right.
And so is drink. So is alcohol as well. I've seen passages where, you know, it is said that anyone who drinks alcohol, or practices usury, or gambling, shall never enter the kingdom of heaven. Never.
Okay.
Okay. So it's real serious stuff here. You know?
Yeah. It's not like, you know.
Yeah. It's not like a.
Well, by the way.
Yeah. By the way. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. You know that according to the Bible, you have to forgive all debts every 7 years.
Exactly.
Did you know that?
Thank you. Yes.
If somebody owes you money after 7 years, you have to forgive them.
You have to forgive them. Yes.
Yes.
That's wonderful.
You know, we have it.
I hope my 7 years is up now.
You don't owe me anything.
Well, thank you.
Right, yes, I forgive you.
Thanks very much indeed, sir.
So,
you know, there's great benefit in discussing this subject. Yes.
So,
exactly.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
You can't deny laws from religion. You can't separate laws from religion.
No.
A big part of religion, all religions, is laws.
Laws.
Now, what happened in Christianity in the West is that they tried to separate it.
Yes.
And say, well, that part is the state and Caesar.
Mm.
Unto Caesar, what is Caesar?
Unto Caesar, that's a very,
you know, whatever. All that
famous
stuff.
Misquote of
right.
Prophet Jesus, peace be upon
right.
him, because I'm sure he never said such a thing.
Right.
Yeah.
And so the point is that when a person like Imam comes, and again, for us in Ghaybat Kubra, in the period of the Greater Occultation, his word is authority. It's hujjah.
Hujjah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes, because I want to quote a verse from
the
Quran.
He's our religious leader.
Exactly. We want to quote a verse from the Quran here, which makes it clear cut. If you have a problem, you have to obey God, you have to obey the Prophet, and you have to obey those who have authority over you.
Right. Which in our case, in our case, we're talking about people who have authority in line of God and the Prophet.
Prophet, exactly.
So it's not whoever has authority over you,
yeah,
which is unfortunately one of the ways that some of the
get
Muslims
wrong.
are interpreting
I'm misabusing
that
this, yes.
You know, you can't follow God and the Prophet and then somebody who is the polar opposite of that.
The polar opposite of that,
you
exactly.
know, that God would not command you to that.
No.
This is not what God would say in his Quran
no.
if he wants you
neither
to follow
mention
you.
The UN either, you know. So,
right.
Yes.
You know, or you know, whoever.
Whoever.
So, this is one of the great things that Imam was teaching us,
exactly.
and he was able to establish this very firmly, is in an era and in a time where humanity was getting very confused about,
yes,
you know, what is religion?
What is religion?
It's,
yeah.
Is it just this emotional thing, which
mm.
is what Christianity had become, this thing that's just related to, you know, when you feel sad or when you feel happy
mm.
or giving praise and, you know, asking for grace, whatever,
mm.
okay? Or is it actually, you know, a package, a real thing that is there to because, you know, we've said this before, and it really is good if we keep reading. What is Islam?
Yes.
Islam is the package, the software, the operational program that Allah has given for the perfection of your soul.
Soul. Thank you.
What do I mean? Your soul, that means you, because that's what you are.
Yes, exactly.
This body will go.
Yes.
You know, this body is not you.
No.
It's the vessel in which your soul is developing for the next, inshallah, 100 years.
Yes.
One day it will you know, turn into dust,
mm-hmm.
your soul is eternal.
Eternal.
Okay. Mm. This is the religious view of a human being.
Being, yes.
And when I say religious, I don't only mean Islam. I mean all those, you know, major religions, Abrahamic religions, whatever you want to call them, monotheistic religions.
Yes.
Even non-monotheistic religions, even some parts of Hinduism, whatever, you are a soul. It's eternal.
That's right.
Okay? This body is a vessel.
It's a vessel.
Okay. So what is Islam? It's Deen al-Haq.
Hmm.
You know, it says the religion with God is al-Islam. This is what the ayah says.
Says. Exactly. Exactly.
You know, it says the religion with in the law. Right? It means yes. With God.
With God.
The religion with God, the one that is with God, is al-Islam. Islam. It's not Islam. Al-Islam.
And this is why we say it's not Christianity, it's Islam.
Right? Because they say, well, totally Islam different. Isn't that a general term? It means, you know, those who submit, isn't that what all religions were? And we're like, yes.
Yes.
If we say Islam in the sense that, you know, those who submit to God, yes.
Yes.
You know, Prophet, you know, Adam, Prophet, you know, Noah, sure. Prophet Abraham, you know, Moses, Jesus, whatever.
Yeah.
These are all Islam.
Islam.
But al-Islam is this one.
This one, the package.
The final revelation.
Yes.
You know, the Deen al-Haq, which was revealed to the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, in the Quran and in his Sunnah. Okay?
Yes.
Following Thaqalain.
Yes.
Okay?
Yes.
So, what is this Islam, al-Islam? It is a package for your perfection. Part of that package are rules.
Mm.
Ahkam.
Yes.
As it relates to you as a person,
rulings,
individual,
yes,
and as it relates to society.
Society.
In fact,
mm.
one of the beautiful things that Imam used to always point out, he said, the relation in among the rules of Islam, and remember, Imam Khomeini was a faqih. He was a legal scholar.
Yeah, legal scholar.
He was a marja.
Yes.
He has books Velayat and books and books.
He was
and
the
books
supreme jurist.
And books as a jurist.
Mm.
So he's not simply, you know, a guy who gets up on the member and, you know, does rosé, you know,
yeah,
which is not a bad thing. I'm simply saying
no,
that.
No, no, but he's the expert.
His field of expertise
was
law.
Law.
Okay? He's a mufti. He's somebody who issues fatwas.
Fatwas.
Okay? So, a part of that package, a very important part of that package, is laws. And as Imam was pointing out, which is the important thing that we have to remember, is that he said the relation within laws, Islamic laws, the relation between laws that relate to society
mm-hmm.
and laws that relate to the individual is 100-1 on the side of society.
Society, yes, exactly.
Because because of the Western influence and because of, you know, the negative influence that came from imperialism and cultural imperialism,
sure.
you know, we wanted to turn Islam into what Christianity had become, which is this personal thing, and forget about Islam, the social...
As the social thing.
And the social aspects of Islamic laws.
Sure.
You know, let the government deal with that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the government who will get together in their parliaments and, you know, decide what is... The wise men will get together and you know, tell us what the laws are. And so one day, you know, having two men being married is illegal, and the next day it's legal.
Mm-hmm.
For example. Okay. I'm just giving an example.
Yeah, no, I mean, exactly.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
So, that's not the case in Islam.
No,
Islam has rules for society. When you have somebody who's a murderer,
mm-hmm.
proven to be so in a trial, where there's, you know, appeals and multiple appeals, and there's strict rules of evidence, and there's
mm-hmm.
all the things that all legal scholars consider to be a proper judicial procedure. After this proper judicial procedure has ended, and there is a final verdict that this person is guilty of murder, then there is an execution.
Exactly.
Okay? And no parliament can change that.
No. No.
Okay?
Yeah, just because of an election.
Right.
Exactly.
You know, certain definitions of what a family is,
mm.
those are the definitions of what a family is.
Exactly.
And, you know, I just want to point out here, I think for the people for our listeners in the West and the Western Muslims, this is interesting. We suddenly see everybody going nuts. Oh, no, you know, for example, you know, same-sex marriages. Oh, that's also marriage.
Mm.
So why not, you know, a man and three women, is you know, as in the Islamic,
yes,
or a man and four wives?
Well, why is that?
Again, we're talking about consenting adults, each one choosing
exactly.
to do this. Now, we're not talking about forced marriages, which is un-Islamic.
Yes.
Forcing anyone into a marriage is un-Islamic.
No,
it's against Islamic laws,
no.
and you will be punished
for
it. No,
as consenting
okay.
adults, which is what they refer to in terms of this
right.
gay marriage
I'm using the same standard.
Same
By
standard.
The same standard,
mm-hmm.
Why is this bad and that's good?
Good.
They say, well, it's a marriage is between two people. So who said?
Who said?
If in fact, if you look at the history of humanity,
we didn't have
to. That. The majority form of marriage has between one man and multiple wives.
Multiple.
That's actually been the main way that people have been married. Mad. If you look at throughout history, and if you look at different, groups
cultures?
Around the world, and groups around, that's actually been the dominant way of having marriage.
Exactly.
And families.
Yes. And the chief normally had the most women.
Right. And that's why Islam came and reduced it. The four is
reducing
it.
He had to reduce it.
Right? It's not about, people are like, oh, why are you guys talking about this stuff? We're talking about the fact that you have this Deen al-Haq.
Yes.
It's a package deal.
Yes.
It's there for the perfection of your soul. Perfection of your soul. A big part of the perfection of your soul relates to your social life
and your
family life.
Exactly.
And how you interact in your society and your community and your nation and the world.
Absolutely.
It's not about you just being in your, quiet corner with your, oil lamp, doing prayers.
Yes.
That's not what it's all about only. Yes, that is a part of the perfection of your soul, doing your ibadat, doing your prayers with God.
Mm.
Okay? But there's other aspects to it. This is where Islam comes in and talks about that. Okay? A person like Imam Khomeini, who is a religious authority, whose word is hujjah in the Ghaybat Kubra for us, says, you can't have this cafeteria, like you mentioned very nicely, this cafeteria Islam. Let me just explain cafeteria. There's a term in the West called cafeteria Catholic.
Yes.
Because they were referring to Catholics who would, as though they are in a cafeteria, where they can pick and choose whatever food that they want and put it on their tray.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's where the expression comes from, is that you go into a cafeteria,
and you just choose whatever.
Yeah,
you
a buffet, whatever.
Yeah,
you want
whatever
call it,
you prefer.
And you just put things on your plate.
And
this is what I like from Catholicism.
Catholicism.
You know, the abortion. No, let's have the abortion. You know.
Yes.
And so this term came about in Catholicism. You can't be a cafeteria Catholic. It's a full package.
It's a full package.
So, you can't be a cafeteria Muslim.
No.
And say, you know what? I like the prayer part. I like the fasting part.
I don't
like the jihad part. Don't tell me to go to.
Yes.
And it's interesting. We have many ayat where it says, the minute the command of jihad comes to you, you start making excuses. Your eyes start rolling. You get this, these are ayat from the Quran. These are not things.
And doesn't God condemn?
And he says, you haven't.
Doesn't he condemn that if you don't turn up in the battlefield to fight for your religion?
Right. He says, the color of your face, the color of your face changes.
Mm.
You suddenly start making excuses.
I pray to God our faces don't change any color.
Again,
because
so
I really want to go 11.
We're addressing this first and foremost
to
ourselves.
Yes, I really want to go 11. I want to get there as quickly as possible.
Well, there might be other battles.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm saying that,
I'm
we're
so happy to hear that.
we're addressing this in the first place to ourselves.
Yes.
We're not trying to say that we're
anyone. No, not by
the
any
point
means.
Is that, this is what Imam was teaching us.
Mm.
He was saying that you can't be a Muslim and then deny criminal punishment for a murderer.
That's right.
What does that mean? Okay, and you say, isn't it barbaric?
Eye for an eye, go for it.
Listen, they go, isn't it barbaric these days? Why can't we just put him in jail?
Come on.
You know what the answer is? What's more barbaric? A person makes a mistake,
they're
whipped half an hour, you take you whip them,
and that's it.
They go home. Or you take that person, you put them in jail for 2 years.
2 years.
They lose their job.
Job.
They lose their insurance.
Mm.
The kids without the father.
Father.
The wife without the husband.
Husband.
Everything, the whole life of the family.
Is
even
ruined.
Even though it's, forget about 2 years, 6 months in prison.
6 months, yes.
The whole life of a family is destroyed.
Destroyed.
Because of the mistake of one person.
Person. That's not fair.
Is that not barbaric?
That is unjust.
What's more barbaric? The person goes, he gets his punishment, he puts on his shirt, goes back home.
Go home.
And maybe the only person that finds out is his wife.
Exactly.
Not even his children.
That's right, because we're supposed to maintain
not his dad or his father
exactly.
or his mother or his
yeah.
cousin or Uncle Lou and
whatever.
Uncle Jim and
we're supposed to still maintain
Aunt
their
Betty,
honor.
Whatever, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So what's more barbaric?
Mm.
You're ruining the life of an entire family because of a mistake that one person made, in the so-called civilized. Let's put him in prison.
Mm.
Forget about how long the trial takes. Forget
about exactly.
Everything is.
How torturous is that?
Listen, I'll give you an example.
Please.
There are truck drivers in the European Union,
and
they're poor fellas. They're truck drivers. They're not like rich guys.
Yeah.
Okay? And they'll go to the different borders, and some of these smugglers will be like, okay, take this amount of cigarettes to this country, because there's different.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're like, oh, we'll give you this much amount of money if you take it across the border, especially France and Britain.
Britain, yeah.
Because they have different rates.
Yes.
And they get busted. I'm talking about a, you know, maybe a quarter load of cigarettes in a truck. And then the guy they catch him, and the guy goes to prison for a year as a smuggler. Right?
Yeah.
Is this civilized? The poor guy, he might have been desperate to get maybe €1,000 or £1,000.
Whatever, yes, absolutely.
His offense is, you know, cigarettes.
Cigarettes, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Not a good thing, but also not horrendous. Not a huge catastrophe.
Catastrophe, yes.
But the law says you have to go to prison for a year or two, at least minimum.
Minimum, yes.
3 years, 4 years, depending
on.
And
loss of job.
You lose your job. You lose everything. Your entire life is ruined. Is this civilized? Let me give you another example. Because they say, oh, execution, we don't execute anymore. Execution is uncivilized. Mm. It's for animals. Really? The guy in Norway.
Mm.
How many people did he kill?
90, I think.
Whatever.
Yeah.
A lot. 40, 50, 60, 90.
90, yeah.
How much did he get?
I think it was 6 years. Was it?
20 years.
20 years, right.
Three square meals, internet access, TV.
Mm.
You know, jail in Norway is pretty decent.
Oh, is it? Is it? Oh.
You know, most people in the world would like to have that as their house. Right?
Right.
Most people on Earth would like to have Norwegian prison as the house that they live in.
Live in, yes. I'm
okay?
Sure they do.
So this hewan, this animal.
Oh, yes. Goes there.
Is going to go for 20 years.
And that's going to compensate.
And you know why? We don't have lifelong imprisonment in Norway. They said it's not civilized to you know, put a human being in prison for his whole life.
But what he did was a human, was it?
What about the family?
What about the justice? Where's
the
justice in that? Yeah, exactly.
What about the
family? What about the 90 families that he's ruined?
What about the mothers and the fathers of those young people that he killed?
Yeah, and are orphaned.
We're not talking about Muslims. Don't think I'm...
No. This is not
Muslims. This is normal...
Yeah, we're just talking about...
As a mother and as a father.
Father, yeah. And the kids that he orphaned. Come on.
What about them?
What about them?
So that's civilized. Mm. Not killing him. Killing him is barbaric. Right?
Exactly.
This is the point we're
trying
to make.
This is the kind of perverse
okay?
world
we've,
we live in.
We've come to a point in this world, and thank God there was people like Imam.
Mm. To put this...
Who
corrected this.
You know, unapologetically,
yes,
were saying, this is wrong,
this
and
is
Islam is right.
Right.
Right? Logically right. What according to human nature
is right.
Right. What according to human conscience is right.
Right.
Not simply because I say so, it's right.
No.
Okay?
That's
we're not talking about, you know, this Taliban-style Wahhabi caricature, organ-eating, you know, chopping off heads with a sword in the middle of the, you know, town square, Islam. That's not what we're talking about.
Yeah.
They would love us, they would love the world to think that that's Islam.
No.
You know, he Imam had this other sentence, we mentioned it before.
Yes.
You know, so it's we're talking about real Deen al-Haq, whether it's as it relates to these Wahhabi Takfiri caricature of Islam, or whether it relates to this kind of wishy-washy Christianity that we have now, or this, you know, crazy kind of Zionist Judaism that we have.
Yes.
Okay, this racist, you know, dry, you know, just purely let's just obey the rules dryly without even thinking about them kind of, you know, Judaism that we have today, which is not the real, you know, it's not the religion of Moses. Okay,
that's
the Zionism is not the religion.
Zionism is not,
you know,
the religion of Moses.
Prophet Musa, peace be upon him, would not approve you, you know, building separate rows for...
Yes.
Right?
Absolutely.
For his own children.
No.
Because, you know, Palestinians are, you know,
children
of Abraham.
Yeah, they are. They're
right?
Part of the same progeny.
Right. They're cousins.
They're descendants.
You don't discriminate against your cousins.
No, you don't.
Right? So, this is why we have a person like Imam talking about real Deen al-Haq, about the real religion of God, the final revelation, you know, the real path to getting to God, as opposed to this caricature, as opposed to this wishy-washiness. He had this famous sentence. He said, we have to make a revolution so that, God forbid, people don't think that Islam is like Christianity.
Fantastic.
He said, we're Muslims. Of course we have to have a revolution.
We're
of course we have to stand up to a tyrant and who's being backed by you know, an imperialist regime.
Regime, yes.
Okay. He said, so God forbid people don't think that Islam is like Christianity.
Exactly.
Okay? We don't want to be like that. We don't want to be, quote, civilized, where a person kills 50, 70, 80 people and then gets 20 years, you know, free meals. We don't want to be a place where a person makes a small mistake, where the father of a family who is trying to support his kids, who is having difficult times. I mean, look at the lives we have today in Europe in terms of just we've lived there. Just as a man, as a husband, as a father, trying to support your family.
It's
how difficult is it?
It is very hard.
Where you're not cheating, where you're not being,
it's very hard.
Stealing, where you're not doing fraud, where you're not some banker doing billion-dollar trades on the computer and, ripping off the world, So the poor guy, he's a truck driver.
And the white-collar crime is never punished.
And they don't get the guy in the city of London or in Paris or in New York who's, ripping off billions.
Ripping off billions.
Sending thousands and tens of thousands of people into the poorhouse because of the
and
stuff
making
that
them
he
homeless.
Does.
Yes,
right? Right? And they get the guy who is smuggling, 20 packets or 100 packets of cigarettes, and they put him in jail for 3 years.
Where's the justice in that?
That's civilized. Yeah. Okay, so that's civilization.
Yes,
we are the barbarians.
Yeah.
Yes?
Yeah.
Is that
that's what they want us to think.
Is that the case?
No, it's not.
I would clearly submit that, yes, if you look at the Takfiri caricature, organ-eating, liver-cutting-out Islam, yes, they're no doubt they're barbarians.
Barbarians, yes.
But this, what Imam taught us, this Islam, this complete package, where it includes everything, jihad is not warmongering. Jihad is defending yourself.
Self.
It's justice.
It's justice.
This is what human
defending
nature
your rights.
Does. You defend your family. You defend your home. You defend your city.
Sure.
You defend your nation. This is what human beings do. Real human beings do these things.
Sure.
So I think that's really the bottom line, that we have to see this as a package. And thank God, we thank God that we have leaders and had leaders like Imam who taught us what real Islam is.
Dr. Mahdi Trabi, thank you very much indeed. On that note, that was a wonderful contribution there. I hope our listeners benefited from what we said, because there were some very, very important points in what you discussed there. But it just leaves me to say, Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. May the peace and mercy and blessings of Allah be upon you all. Thank you for listening.
Cuba has seen a series of anti-government protests. The protesters say they are desperate, poor, hungry, and fed up with Havana's inability to meet their basic needs. Yet there are documents that show Washington is seriously embroiled in these rare events.
Folks, I want to start by recognizing the remarkable protests that are taking place in Cuba. The Cuban people are demanding their freedom from an authoritarian regime. And I don't think we've seen anything like this protest in a long, long time, if quite frankly, ever.
Everything began in the town of San Antonio de los Baños in the west of the country. The protest came after a power outage left the residents without electricity during the summer heat. They were then encouraged and even led by artists, especially hip-hop musicians, to take to the streets. Florida Senator Marco Rubio enthusiastically tweeted, "For those new to the issue of Cuba, the protests we are witnessing were started by artists, not politicians. Song, Patria y Vida, powerfully explains how young Cubans feel," referring to a track by Cuban rapper UTL. Similarly, the New York Times published an in-depth article about the song and the role it had in galvanizing the movement. But both the U.S. Senator and the U.S. Daily failed to mention Cuban rappers like Yutiel have long been on the payroll of the White House to sow discontent in Cuba. The latest grant publications of the National Endowment for Democracy, NED, which front the CIA, show that the U.S. government is trying to get into the Cuban arts community so as to further its so-called regime change agenda in the Caribbean nation. In the words of Tracy Eaton, a journalist who runs the Cuba Money Project, the State Department, the U.S. Agency for International Development, and the U.S. Agency for Global Media have all financed programs to support Cuban artists, journalists, bloggers, and musicians, adding, "It's impossible to say how many U.S. tax dollars have gone toward these programs over the years, because details of many projects are kept secret." The hip-hop scene in particular has long been a target for American agencies like the NED and USAID for its biting critiques of Cuban society. Currently, a grant offer from USAID is offering $2 million worth of funding to groups that use culture to bring about social change in Cuba.
It would be great to see the United Nations step up and condemn that. I know that President Biden has spoken that they're trying to see what they can do to get the internet back up. That would be important. We're all doing whatever we can.
Meanwhile, the U.S. House Appropriations budget has also set aside up to $20 million for democracy programs in Cuba. Needless to say, any mention of democracy in Cuba is all but synonymous with regime change. But for what the Americans call a regime change, they have pinned their hopes on economic crises in the country, and they've done their best in this regard. As Professor Aviva Chomsky of Salem State University, author of A History of the Cuban Revolution, put it, the U.S. embargo or blockade is one, not the only cause of Cuba's economic crisis. The U.S. has overtly and continuously said that the goal of the embargo is to destroy Cuba's economy so that the government will collapse. While it is not true to say that all those marching in the protests are on the pay list of the U.S., it is not also true to say that the protests are all due to internal problems. On some occasions, a number of demonstrators march underneath the U.S. flag, and the protests were immediately endorsed by Washington. Meanwhile, Florida Congressman Anthony Sabatini called for regime change on the island, tweeting, "High-ranking communist officials in Cuba should be given an ultimatum now. Either immediately assist in the transition of government away from communism or be prosecuted and executed thereafter. Hashtag SOS Cuba." At the same time, corporative media have shown great interest in covering the protests while constantly downplaying the effect of U.S. sanctions. For example, the Washington Post published a feature in favor of the protesters, claiming the Cuban president was reacting with predictable thuggishness, blaming everything on the United States and the U.S. trade embargo. That's while government documents openly state that the goal of the U.S. sanctions is to decrease monetary and real wages, to bring about hunger, desperation, and the overthrow of the government. Oddly enough, a great number of media outlets used images of pro-government movements to show the support scope of the anti-government protests. The Guardian, Fox News, the Financial Times, NBC, and Yahoo News all falsely claimed a picture of a large socialist gathering was, in fact, an anti-government demonstration. Meanwhile, Twitter has long shown enmity towards Havana. In 2019, the corporation suspended almost every Cuban state media account, in addition to those belonging to the Communist Party. That said, in 2010, USAID secretly created a Cuban social media app called Zunzunio, often described as Cuba's Twitter. The aim was to set up a platform to spew out Cubans' regime change propaganda and then direct them to protests, with the ultimate aim of fomenting a color-style revolution. Since the late 19th century, the Americans have always been trying to interfere in Cuba, either through invasion, occupation, or subversion. In 1961, they launched a failed invasion of the island. They reportedly attempted to kill Fidel Castro hundreds of times. Then they decided to focus mostly on blockade and economic war, a policy they've been pursuing for over six decades. They hope that economic misery will bring the nation to its knees, but so far the resistance of the Cuban people has dashed those hopes.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Those who are fully vaccinated against the coronavirus should return to wearing face masks in indoor public spaces in areas that are seeing substantial or high virus transmission. The Center for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, announced on Tuesday, 27th of July, in a major reversal of its guidance. The article you're about to hear has been written by Cecilia Smith Schoenwalder, a journalist writing about science and the environment for U.S. News and World Report. The piece is titled CDC Reverses Guidance, says fully vaccinated people should wear masks inside in certain areas. Stay with us for more of Cecilia Smith Schoenwalder's article. Those who are fully vaccinated against the coronavirus should return to wearing face masks in indoor public spaces in areas that are seeing substantial or high virus transmission, the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, announced on Tuesday, 27th of July, in a major reversal of its guidance. CDC Director Rochelle Walensky cited worrisome new data that shows that fully vaccinated individuals could spread the highly contagious Delta variant if they experience a breakthrough infection. In recent days, I have seen new scientific data from recent outbreak investigations showing that the Delta variant of the coronavirus behaves uniquely differently from past strains of the virus that causes COVID-19. Rochelle Walensky said on a call with reporters without providing details about the data. Information on the Delta variant from several states and other countries indicate that in rare occasions, some vaccinated people infected with the Delta variant after vaccination may be contagious and spread the virus to others. Walensky said individuals can check the CDC's data tracker to see their community transmission on a county basis. Roughly 63% of U.S. counties are considered to have high or substantial transmission, according to the CDC data. When the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, previously relaxed its masking guidance in May, many jurisdictions and businesses followed suit, shifting to a sort of honor system in which those who are not fully vaccinated were expected to continue masking. As the Delta variant continued to spread, more experts pressured the agency to change its guidance. As of just last week, Rochelle Walensky stood by the previous guidance, saying, Our guidance has been clear since we put it out several months ago, and that is, if you are unvaccinated, you should continue to wear a face mask and protect yourself against others around you. However, she added that we're always looking at the data as the data comes in, and that some individuals who are fully vaccinated can choose to mask up for an extra layer of protection. The agency on Tuesday, 27th of July, also said the masking guidance for those who are fully vaccinated applies to grades K-12, recommending everyone inside school buildings wear face masks regardless of vaccination status. It's yet another shift from roughly 3 weeks ago, when the agency relaxed masking guidelines for fully vaccinated students and school staff. The previous guidance faced pushback from some, and the American Academy of Pediatrics followed by publishing its own guidelines to encourage masking in schools, regardless of vaccination status. When we released our school guidance on 9th of July, we had less Delta variant in this country. We had fewer cases in this country, and importantly, we were really hopeful that we would have more people vaccinated, especially in the demographic between 12 to 17 years old, Rochelle Walensky said, adding that only 30% of individuals in the age group are fully vaccinated. The guidance changes come as the Delta variant makes up the majority of new coronavirus cases in the United States, which is seeing an increase in infections, hospitalizations, and deaths. Unvaccinated individuals should still wear face masks indoors, according to CDC guidance. Center for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, issued a statement saying teachers and students should wear face masks inside classrooms, regardless of whether they are fully vaccinated or not. The statement represents a backtrack that comes just 3 weeks after the government's top public health officials said it was safe for those vaccinated to be maskless inside school buildings. The updated guidance reflects the rapid increase in infections, transmission, and hospitalizations stemming from the spread of the Delta variant of the coronavirus, including among vaccinated individuals, and comes as the vast majority of schools across the country prepare to welcome students back for in-person learning full-time, 5 days a week, some for the first time in over a year.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really in fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing of our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم dear listeners welcome to Islamic Upbringing at IRIB English Radio. We talk about things that we might encounter in our daily lives, specifically with our children. In this program, our sources are the Quran and the traditions that we have from the Ahlul Bayt. We've got Brother Abdullah Al-Musawi today with us, and we're glad to have him here. Let's welcome him to our program. Assalamu alaikum, brother. Welcome to English Radio.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and thank you for having me.
The pleasure is all ours, and we do look forward to seeing you again and again and again. The thing is, one thing leads to another thing, right? So in our previous programs, we talked about democracy, and we did explain what we mean by democracy. By the way, if you missed out on that program, go to our website, pastoday.com, and you'll find the episodes there. Today, I think we should, for example, like, it's a child, right? And the child might see and might feel uncomfortable when it's that the democracy that he needs is not being given to them. There is this inherited, if I may say, mentality within parents that they have got this habit, you know, they just order and they are dictators, right? What can be done as a society and as individuals for us to get rid of this mentality and deal with it in a manner?
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad wa ajjil farajah. So when we said that we need to teach our kids democracy, we don't mean that we give them the absolute freedom to do whatever they want, whatever time they want, in whatever way they want. This is not what we're saying. We're saying you need to give them a voice, give them the bit of respect, so they feel like they are individual, and then they could communicate with you. This method it creates in them that to respect the opinion of other people and not become, as we call, dictators.
As right. as you elaborated right. in the previous right.
An ayah in the Quran, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, and it is very beautiful ayah, he says, أَمْرُهُمْ shura بَيْنَهُمْ. Right? Mm-hmm. Their affair is a counseling between them.
Right.
And okay. the word Amruhum is a very sensitive word, because sometimes people mistranslate this word. They said, well, everything, it's even in, for example, even choosing a leader, a khalifa, is shura, is a council between us.
Mm.
Allah says, no, Amruhum, your affairs, not my affairs. Leadership is my affair.
That's not of your business.
Yeah. I place a khalifa. This out of you. Things that concern you, make it a shura, make it a council between you guys. Today, what we call is, you know, the parliament is basically this is the shura counseling. They sit together and they decide what they want. And instead of having just one person dictating how everyone should live or what should happen to everybody, right? If we teach our kids that, you know, that kind of shura in Islam, they will become better, easy people. They will become free thinkers. They won't become dictators. For example, and this is something that we need to begin teaching our kids from a young age, right? For example, you want to take your child to the park, for example. You say to him, which park should we go to? You give him choice, right? Giving him choice, meaning that you're giving him freedom, you're giving him responsibility, you're giving him making him feel that he's an individual. He's not just a follower. He's not just a sheep. He's, you know, someone who has a say.
Leads him.
It doesn't make a difference to you which park he goes to, but when you install this method in him, it makes him feel a lot better. What time should we go? What back should we take? What sort of food should we take?
I mean, bright individuals in our society are actually formed from that core and significant manner that you just mentioned. We're going to carry on about this and we'll return shortly after this break. Please stay tuned.
When I was born, the first words that I had heard were the words of Allah being whispered through my ear. And as I felt Allah's presence in my soul, that day Islam took me in its fold.
Welcome back, dear listeners. We're talking about Amruhum Shura Bainahum, as Brother translated. And You're elaborating on that. Even something as small as going to a park, is it?
It is, because we're dealing with kids, right? So we need to bring the things that they deal with themselves to their level. I mean, I'm not going to talk to them about something that's higher than they could comprehend. This is maybe I deal with other people, which we should, which we don't do, sadly. That's one of the problems. Mm-hmm. But with our kids, that's where we have to start from the beginning. So we, for example, they want to buy toys. They like toys. You give them that option. Okay, we have certain toys. Which toy would you like? That, just ask him that question, what would you like? Where should we go? That flexibility and option, it grows in the child a sense not just that he's respected, but to respect other people. And this is what we're trying to get at. This is what we're trying to say that when it comes to democracy. So like I said, or like you said, it's as simple as choosing a park, choosing a place to eat, choosing where to go, choosing the time, choosing a place. And so these things, this is what the child grows with. But as he grows older and older, it becomes embedded into him. For example, we say those, for example, those who play soccer, right? Those who always trying to score a goal, they never give a pass.
We hate those people.
Yeah, so their mindset is what? They've been brought up in a sense where, no, I can do it. You know, I will disregard everyone else. And this is the dictatorship ideology. Where people who actually always, you know, he will give a pass at the, you know, at the first instant he find possible, he passes the ball. That person brought up with the concept of shura, right?
Yeah, so something as small as a football game, you can see how you've been brought up.
Well, this is how psychology works. This is how psychologists determine what type of person you are through the things that you do in your life. And say, okay, you do such a thing, which means this concept went wrong in your life, or this is happening in your life. For example, when you dissect a dictator, for example, Hitler, for example, or Mussolini or Saddam Hussein, you see that in their childhood, things went wrong.
Certainly
and,
did.
And it changed the way they think, right? So that's why we say, well, from an Islamic point of view, when Allah says, Amrum shura baynahum, you give them that ability to choose so they don't become dictators, because we don't want that. We had so many of them.
Yeah, we've had enough.
And these guys just cause bloodshed and, you know. So we don't want that. So we begin with our kids with the smallest things. Sometimes even the way you arrange their rooms. Like, what would you like your bed? In here or here?
What color bed sheet do you want?
Small things. But to the child, they are, you know.
Major things. It's decision making.
Actually, they are very fundamental to him. And like you, this is where you plant your seeds and you build your pillars that will, you know, that the child will, as he grows old, will rely on. So this is when we say democracy goes against a dictatorship in that sense.
Yeah,
that we have to begin with.
We see that it's something very natural for children, because even toddlers who can't even speak, for example, they've placed a toy somewhere and you just move it like a couple of inches. They do not like that. They just put it back where they wanted to put it, right?
Exactly.
So that's something that's within them. We'll carry on about this and see what else we can get out of the questions that we have today. Please stay tuned, dear listeners.
The Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam said, honor your children and teach them good manners.
Welcome back, dear listeners. We are talking about how we put democracy and the mentality within a child, and we have done that in the previous program. One question that remains for us is, for those people who still have, as parents, this mentality that whatever I say is right, as you say, my way or the highway, what can be done to convince these people, you know, to change their minds and approach?
Okay, convincing people, it's not an easy task itself.
No,
right?
It isn't.
Because convincing itself requires democracy, requires leniency. But as parents, because me and you, we are parents, for example, we have kids, and our concern is the well-being of our child mentally and physically, right? We want to have a good child. That's our aim. So you, as a parent, as an educator, you have to make it your mission to always find ways to bring your child in a good manner. So this is your mission in life, right?
Yeah.
So your mission is to learn why, so you can have a good child. Because if I become a stubborn and say, you know what, it's okay, my child, he'll become good, and I leave it to chance, then obviously you're shooting your child in the head,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
You're just killing him mentally. You're just killing that child. So if you love your child and you want your child to have a proper upbringing, then you are required to do it, to make some changes, as simple as that. And changes sometimes, I mean, for example, let's take an example. Let's say a parent who's all his life has been giving orders, now he wants to change. Sure, you can change. It takes time. It takes patience, like we mentioned in the other episode. We mentioned the ayah from the Quran. Allah says, وَأَمَرْ أَهْلَكَ
بِالصَّلَاةِ,
give you orders, give orders to follow them to pray. وَاسْتَبَرْ عَلَيْهَا, it requires patience.
Mm-hmm.
So change your vocabulary, right? Change the way you talk. Just change that, and patience, and slowly you will see the difference. Mm-hmm. If you have a stubborn child that never listens to you, and I'm telling you right now, he's not listening to you because you're giving him orders. Anyway, and that's it. As simple as that. He's not listening to you because he hates orders. Don't watch TV. Turn off the game. Do this. Do that. They hate that.
Mm.
For example, if you have a child that plays a lot of games, for example, constantly on the console, and he just don't let it go. Instead of saying to him, turn it off, don't play anymore, and you create like a backlog of, I don't know, black holes in his brain, say to him, how about we choose times for you to play? Or how about we put a schedule for your playing? Or how about this and how about that, right? And then he's like, yeah, sure, why not? I'm going to voice my opinion. So since I can't say what I want to say, then yeah, sure, I don't mind playing from 5 to 6, for example, or in the afternoon. Or this way, you got to your point, but he done it himself.
Mm-hmm.
So as a parent, like I said, first we are motivated. We're driven by the fact that we love our kids. We want to give them the best upbringing. And second is that we need to be patient.
Yeah, and the decisions that we make for them is only very limited by time, isn't it? Because how long are we going to make decisions for our children? Our children most likely will outlive us. And if we carry on doing this, the children, what about the times when we're not there? We're physically or in terms of either they outlive us or we are distant from them in time of space, you know, in terms of space. So yeah, if you want them to be independent individuals, we might as well just start doing that right now when they're with us rather
that's
than
it. Because once they hit teenage years, it's going to be too late.
Yeah, it's too late, yeah. And then so we can just keep on bang ourselves on the head, and there is no outcome.
Which a lot of parents do these days.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, precisely. You see them doing that. I think we pretty much did conclude whatever we had to say about democracy, or what do you suggest? It's a conclusion, isn't it? Or
yeah.
Do we have, all right.
Yeah.
Okay. So if you've got any topics or any questions, please send them in at englishradio@irib.ir so we can elaborate and we can discuss and analyze what we can get out of those. Our website is parstoday.com, parstoday.com, in case you've missed out on our episodes and are interested in listening to them. And other social media is Call of Islam Radio, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. So we'll be waiting for your response and suggestions. Until next time, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Do you know what Islam says? It says that life's the greatest test. It says that life's a borrowed space returned upon rest.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 41 meters, 7,410 kilohertz for Indian subcontinent. And FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran, You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or BAT 5, and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.